Welcome to the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast with Dean Linke, covering soccer in the United States from youth to pro, telling stories about people who are making a difference in the game at every level. Now, here's the host of the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast, a former U.S. soccer press officer and 25-year television play-by-play broadcaster, Dean Linke.
I am Dean Linke and excited to be part of the newly named United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast with me, Dean Linke, and delighted to be with each and every one of you. We have another great show, two U.S. soccer legends in Alexi Lalas and Brad Friedel, and sandwiched in between, we make a little history with Andre Swanston, who is the first black owner of a professional soccer team. He'll own the MLS Next team in Connecticut. You'll enjoy my visit with Andre Swanston in between Alexi Lalas and Brad Friedel. And it all starts after this message. Stay with us.
If you would like to be a guest on the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast, please reach out to Dean via email. It's deancelinke@gmail.com. Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast with Dean Linke. Once again, here's Dean.
Really excited and certainly appreciate United Soccer Coaches for the new name of the podcast, the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast with me, Dean Linke, and all of you. And when I say all of you, you know what? I actually do want to talk to all of you. Certainly excited to talk to our next guest, though. And of course, for this first edition, I think it's only appropriate that I reach out as a former press officer to a true soccer icon, A, B, I think one of the best in the TV business, and then C, also as a former press officer, don't you always remember the people that would do anything for you, no matter if it was the biggest TV station in the world or the smallest newspaper in a little corner pocket of the U.S., Alexi Lalas was always there and ready to help out. He's a U.S. Soccer Hall of Famer. He is a living, walking legend. He's a true ambassador for the sport, having done it all. And I also remember him as number 22 with the red beard and the curly hair. My parents remember him the same way. His look has changed a little bit, but his likability has not, as I think he's fantastic. Number 22, that's how I remember you. Is that all right, Lexi?
Yeah. I'll never forget when I came in to, I guess it would be tryout for the 2 years of residency that we had before the 94 World Cup. We were in Mission Viejo, California, and they asked what number you would like. And it was kind of like when Ford said you can have any color car except it has to be black. The only XL was 22. And so that's the only reason that I was 22, is because it was the only one that fit me.
No way. Okay. Yep. All right. And remind me what number you wore at Rutgers, Alexi.
I would have to look up. I don't know. 21 maybe or something like that.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember. I don't remember the. No, I don't remember.
Okay, so that never mattered to you that much.
I can't. No, it wasn't like important to me, in that sense, the number as it was. But how you doing, man?
I'm good. Doing great. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah, never been fatter, but super happy.
Shut up. You look great. You look great.
Alexi, you continue to roll on. I mean, you've now settled in. I mean, this is now your calling, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is your home, isn't it? I mean, remember I tried to make you president of U.S. soccer a few times and that type of thing, but what do you think?
I mean, knock on wood, until I get fired, I'm going to keep doing this and they can pry it from my cold, dead, redheaded hands, but I'm having a blast. I'm enjoying, I've now been involved in this side in front of the camera now for last couple of decades almost. It's been incredible. It's been a wonderful ride. It has given me, as we've talked about before, the opportunity to continue to perform and entertain and stay involved in the game. And, I stopped kicking a ball almost 20 years ago to the day. So it would have been the fall of 2003. And yet I've been able to make a living and a great living and have a wonderful time, incredible adventures without kicking a ball since then. So it says a lot about how far the game has come with all of these different opportunities. And, as I said, I am so grateful to have fallen into this TV world that I just love, and I can get better. I make plenty of mistakes, and people love to tell me about my mistakes, but, you know, it's something I want to do and something I want to continue to do and continue to get better at.
And you're never afraid to go ahead and have conversations with, for lack of a better word, the trolls that are out there on social media. You kind of pick and choose when you want to engage, but you're not afraid to every once in a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm maybe a glutton for punishment, or I'm sure there's a shrink out there probably that could analyze me and you know, talk about my, you know, underlying insecurities or whatever it ends up being. But the reality is I enjoy debate. I grew up in a household where it was not only encouraged, it was mandatory. And so defending, I guess, not just yourself, but defending your opinion is near and dear to me and something that I like to do. And I unfortunately think in this day and age, we don't have enough of that. Now, there are people that are specifically going after that provocation and therefore that reaction. And so you are feeding into what they want. But sometimes, you know what, it's fun to go back and forth. And I look at it much more as a video game and something to occupy my time from an entertainment perspective than actual true human interaction. This is human interaction. I'm looking at you, you're looking at me. We are two humans. We are interacting. I can say something. You can disagree. We can go back and forth. But what somebody would say behind a keyboard might be very, very different in tone and in content. And so you're not getting the true authentic, well, maybe you're getting sometimes even more true and authentic, but you're certainly not getting that human type of experience and interaction that is gone in many instances by the wayside.
You know me really well, Alexi Lalas, and I think one of the things that you know is I loved you because you got what the media would mean. But the other thing that I still spend time on, you may not know this and may not care, but I try to inform people that you were one hell of a player. And, you know, I mean, you won the Mac Herman Trophy. You were a starting center back. You're a big-time hockey player as well. As the new generation comes up and we're in a different world of soccer, it's spectacular, right? I mean, Messi's here now and MLS is booming and that MLS Cup was ridiculous. And the U.S. team hopefully, you know, really rocks it in 2026. But do you care if people know that you're one hell of a player, Alexi, or what's your thoughts on that?
I, for a couple of things. I don't particularly care. Well, first off, there's a whole generation that never saw me play and only knows me from television. And I actually take great pride in that because, you know, had I stopped playing and, you know, just gone off and done other things, that never would have happened. So to kind of parlay the on-field into something off-field that, in many instances, you could actually argue has been not necessarily more, well, at times more gratifying, but has given me as much, I guess, notoriety, attention as anything I actually did on the field. I'm proud that I was able to do that. As far as, you know, a younger generation looking at me and others, I mean, we can grumpy old man this till the cows come home if you want. My friend Brad Friedel just walked by, and, you know, we sit around and we say, hey, and all this kind of stuff. This new generation that wakes up today, Dean Linke, and looks at their landscape of soccer, all the pathways and the resources and the opportunities, whether it's the coaching or the fields that they have, or, I mean, we're talking about players now that haven't even played a minute in MLS that are getting seen and sought after by clubs around the world. That's awesome. I had to start in a World Cup in order to get an opportunity in Europe. I don't care that they remember or acknowledge what happened. As a matter of fact, I stood on the shoulders of others, including players that played in the 1990 World Cup and before, to get the thing. So you pass it forward, and they're like, it's like your children, right? And you don't need the gratification of them acknowledging. You like to think that they respect it, but for the most part, the whole point is that they're growing up in a world that they can't and don't remember, because I don't want them to remember the Wild West and the hard times. We had plenty of good times, but it's changed so dramatically. And by the way, once they're done, hopefully they will have passed it on to that next generation in better shape than when they took it over. I think ultimately that's, if you have any type of legacy, it's that I like to think that we did enough on and off the field to change the game, to evolve the game, and to pass it on to that next generation so there are more opportunities and it's in better shape.
In your wildest dreams, though, did you think, and remember, I was the director of communications for MLS after the World Cup and then went to the Colorado Rapids as the TV voice. And the only time we got crowds in that first year was when the Village People showed up, because who doesn't want to see the Village people, right?
Okay.
When the Monkees showed up, or whether we were throwing some fireworks. Now, like, even the last place teams, for the most part, are getting big-time crowds. I mean, they get it. I mean, did you ever think it? I mean, it's just incredible.
I mean, you were there. I mean, that first day when those whistles blew to start off MLS, I'll never forget. It was an incredibly emotional moment because you rarely get to be the part of something from the very beginning. And to be the part of MLS remains an incredibly proud moment for all of us on and off the field that were there because of what it has become. But none of us is going to sit around and say, oh, we knew that this was going to happen. And we didn't even know it was going to make it year to year, but it was just another type of attempt to have something that hadn't happened in the past, which was a successful professional soccer league with credibility. And now you're almost to 30 years, you're going to be to 30 teams, and what MLS has become is the most successful professional American soccer league, North American soccer league in history.
Ever.
You know, and it has warts, and it's not perfect, and there's plenty of criticism and fair criticism out there on and off the field in terms of what's happened, but you can't deny the success and what's happened in terms of the number of the teams, the way that it has impacted now multiple generations of soccer players and soccer fans and soccer leaders, the opportunities that it has created across the field, whether it's on the field for players or off the field, all of that kind of stuff is pretty cool when you think back on.
You have such an amazing quick recall. You might think this question is silly, but I still want to ask it. Who was the greatest player you played with? Okay, and I probably don't care about your time in Italy. I probably care more about your time wearing the red, white, and blue. Who was the greatest player you played with and why?
Bar none, the best player I ever played with from an American perspective was Tab Ramos.
Nice. This
was a player, and you know, I just got done telling you that this generation doesn't need or I don't care about what they remember. So it's up to me to fill in the blanks for them.
Yeah.
Tab Ramos was a man out of time. Tab Ramos, had he been born now, would be considered better than anything that we're talking about when it comes to Christian Pulisic or anybody else out there. He would have had all of those opportunities and advantages that this generation has now. Tab Ramos was slumming it playing for our national team.
Wow.
And at times I would look at him and say, it must tear him up to have to play with many of us because he was on such another plane in terms of his ability to handle the ball. And nowadays, if he played, the protection that great ball-carrying players have in the midfield. His first three steps were as quick as, you know, insert great running back, you know, Barry Sanders-esque in terms of his center of gravity, his, like I said, the quickness that he had to get away from people, so much so that if we came up against a team like Brazil, which we ended up playing actually in the 94 World Cup, our whole game plan was weather the storm, get the ball to Tab, who, when that would happen, he would either beat two or three players and then we're off to the races, or he would get fouled and then we got a set piece. I mean, it was all geared around him. So when he actually went out in the 94 game against Brazil, it was a huge blow from a tactical, obviously a personal perspective, but also from a tactical perspective. We lost the one guy who could do things that nobody else in America could do.
Wow, that's so well put. I'll never forget it. I don't know if you remember this, but Bora didn't sub in for him because it happened like late.
Right. We made it to the half, right?
Yeah, and then
thinking, who knows?
Yeah, then Tab's laying on the
side of the field, yeah.
Yeah, but they got him in the locker room, and Bora's like shaking him, can you play? Can you play? And his eyes are inside of his head. I mean, he was never the same after that.
He was done. There was no way he was going to, and it was such a shame, and it did change the dynamic of the game, obviously. But, you know, it's part of the history, as is all the other things, and Escobar and all those things. So it was, you know, as I think about what's going to happen here in the next couple of years leading up to 2026, the world is coming back to an America in a very, very different place in terms of the landscape of soccer right now, with so many more, as we said, opportunities and pathways, and a so much more knowledgeable and passionate type of fan base. I mean, I've told you this story before, and for your listeners, I'll tell it again. A couple weeks before the World Cup, I get on a plane. I sit down in the middle seat in our economy class. You know, we have our U.S. soccer polos on or whatever. Older woman sits down next to me. She says, hey, what do you do? I said, I play soccer. And she said, well, you know, what's your job? I said, well, I play soccer. And she said, well, how do you make money? I said, well, I play soccer, ma'am. And 2 weeks later, I'm in front of a billion people on, you know, the world stage. But that's just to give you an idea of what was happening. Now, that wouldn't happen today because there's so much more knowledge about what's going on.
Wow. Great stuff, Alexi Lalas. Hey, couple more questions. I'll let you go. You got to get back over there. But Carly Lloyd is now in the mix.
Yep.
And it's been interesting,
yeah,
right, to watch you and her and both of you, you know, make your points and that type of thing. Just talk about that, mm-hmm, as you bring in new people, obviously like you, a wonderful talent. Ironically, both Rutgers. It's kind of wild and small, crazy world, but that's besides the point. She's clearly not afraid of anything. Yeah. You're not afraid of anything. What do you think?
I love Carly because she is fearless. I love Carly because she has taken to television in the same way that she took to the game on the field. In that, you know, you have good and bad times, but ultimately it's about the work. And she has put in the work, and I think it shows. And then she, like you said, she has the courage when that red light is on, not just to say interesting and provocative things, but to do it in a way that I think appeals to people, all right? And when I say appeal, it doesn't even mean you have to agree. But there's a respect that comes from people being honest on television and doing it in a way that is entertaining and informative in the way that she does. So I got all sorts of time for Carly. I love her as a person. I love her as a colleague. We're so fortunate at Fox to be able to have her and continue to have her. Now she will be going into this summer when we're doing the Copa America and the Euros after two World Cups in a row with her. So, you know, the only problem for Carly Lloyd, as far as I can see right now, is that she has to get on stage and work with me.
All right. Hey, we're going to end it with this, and I know you get this all the time, but from your heart and from that big brain of yours, the USA will win a World Cup on the men's side. When?
Oh, I get to ask this question a lot, and I always say the next World Cup, so in 2026. and look, this is right now, we're talking about the 14th ranked team in the world, and I know FIFA rankings, whatever, but there's also only a small handful of men's teams that have won the World Cup. So it's very difficult for any country to do it, let alone a country that has never done it before. Having said all of that, you know, we're a handball away from possibly going to a semifinal back in 2002. So the soccer gods can smile upon you. And you're definitely, if you're the U.S., going to need a little bit of luck. But every team needs a little bit of luck. And playing at home, playing in front of, you know, not just big crowds, but again, much more educated and vibrant and passionate types of crowds in our home country. And yeah, there'll be people that are cheering for all the other teams too in the biggest World Cup, by the way, that we've ever seen with a number of teams in 48. I just think that you're looking for some magic, and it's not. I think some people think that it's completely Pollyanna, or that I'm not being genuine. Or I am being disingenuous by saying the U.S. can win in 2026. The U.S. can absolutely win a men's World Cup in 2026. So when is the U.S. going to win a World Cup? The men's team will win a World Cup in 2026. There you go.
What a great answer. Hey, look, if we say goodbye, I close my eyes, Alexi, and I see you scoring a goal in Boston. I think it was against England. I think it was the U.S. Cup. Do I have that right?
Old Foxborough Stadium. That's right, yeah.
And you're running crazy. Yeah. And
I wasn't starting at the time for the national
team.
I know. So this was like my big chance. I got in and scored against England, and the rest is history. Because from that day on, Boris started starting me. And he even looked at me after the game and said, that was a very big goal. You have no idea. And I didn't. I was just like, well, I just scored against England. This is great.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, you know, hit Lansdowne Street over there in Boston and have a party.
Right.
And we did. We did. But it definitely changed the trajectory of my time. And Foxborough was always very good to us. And when I came back to play in MLS, I wanted specifically to go to New England and to Boston because of the experiences that I had there.
Isn't that cool that that's the memory I have of
that's
you?
That's awesome. That's awesome. It was a good time.
Lallis, always a pleasure.
Dean Linke, thank you for everything you do, my friend. It's wonderful to see you.
You too,
brother. You haven't changed at all. Look at you.
We'll be back with more. Great to have Alexi Lallis on.
Indeed it is. This is the first ever edition of the Dean of Soccer podcast with Dean Linke. That's me. And since it's the first ever, why not have a first in the first black majority owner of a major soccer team in the United States? Andre Swanston, spelled Swanston, became the first black majority owner of a minor league sports team. It was announced on January 19, 2024, not that long ago. MLS Next Pro announced that the Connecticut United Football Club has been awarded the fifth independent MLS Next Pro expansion team, which is expected to join the league in 2025. Established by Connecticut Sports Group, CTSG, in 2022, Founding partner Andre Swanston is making history as he becomes one of the first black majority owners of a minor league team and one of the very first black owners of any professional sports team. Swanston previously made history, completing the sixth largest exit of any African-American CEO in history. Andre Swanston, quote, Mr. Exit, end quote, is a dynamic tech innovator whose ability to forecast industry shifts, identify opportunities, and take calculated risk has catapulted him from $9 in his pocket to one of the only nine-figure exits by a black American. A regular contributor to Bloomberg, Forbes, Fortune, Wall Street Journal, and The Hollywood Reporter, Andre Swanston was co-founder and CEO of True Optic, a data and identity company for streaming media advertising acquired by TransUnion, where he went on to serve as VP of Media and Entertainment. As a former Division I collegiate track athlete, Swanston's, quote, need for speed, end quote, has transcended the sport to now describe his ability to quickly scale his own entrepreneurial ventures or those in which he invests. Last year at a Black Soccer Coaches Legends event, Lincoln Phillips stood up at the podium and said, the next step is for us to own a team. Guess what? Andre Swanston, a proud black man, owns a soccer team, and we meet Andre Swanston in the first edition of the newly named United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast. Andre Swanston on the bounce.
As a soccer coach, you're no stranger to developing your players. But how are you developing your own expertise? As a United Soccer Coaches member, you receive access to a range of resources, like our online learning platform, The Training Ground, to aid in the growth and enhancement of your coaching skills and career. From coaching education courses to lifestyle services, take advantage of new opportunities and member benefits with an annual United Soccer Coaches membership for just $125. Join the home of all coaches today at UnitedSoccerCoaches.org.
This is the first ever edition of the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast. That's me. And since it's the first ever, why not have a first in the first black majority owner of a major soccer team in the United States? Andre Swanston, spelled S-W-A-N-S-T-O-N, became the first black majority owner of a minor league sports team. It was announced on January 19, 2024, not that long ago. MLS Next Pro announced that the Connecticut United Football Club has been awarded the fifth independent MLS Next Pro expansion team, which is expected to join the league in 2025. Established by Connecticut Sports Group, CTSG, in 2022, founding partner Andre Swanston is making history as he becomes one of the first black majority owners of a minor league team and one of the very first black owners of any professional sports team. Swanston previously made history, completing the sixth largest exit of any African-American CEO in history. Andre Swanston, quote, Mr. Exit, end quote, is a dynamic tech innovator whose ability to forecast industry shifts, identify opportunities, and take calculated risk has catapulted him from $9 in his pocket to one of the only nine-figure exits by a black American. A regular contributor to Bloomberg, Forbes, Fortune, Wall Street Journal, and The Hollywood Reporter, Andre Swanston was co-founder and CEO of True Optic, a data and identity company for streaming media advertising acquired by TransUnion, where he went on to serve as VP of Media and Entertainment. As a former Division I collegiate track athlete, Swanston's, quote, need for speed, end quote, has transcended the sport to now describe his ability to quickly scale his own entrepreneurial ventures or those in which he invests. Last year at a Black Soccer Coaches Legends event, Lincoln Phillips stood up at the podium and said, the next step is for us to own a team. Guess what? Andre Swanston, a proud black man, owns a soccer team, and we meet Andre Swanston in the first edition of the Dean of Soccer podcast with Dean Linke.
Andre, I told you before you came on, that event last year was the most amazing event I've ever been at, right? Nicole Hercules is like, I mean, the modern day Martin Luther King Jr. almost. I mean, she's an amazing woman. And Lincoln Phillips said, next up is what you're doing. So I'm sorry if I'm emotional, Andre, but like you're making a difference, dude. You're making history. Like, tell me you're excited about that.
Yeah, look, it's surreal. It's overwhelming. This is a journey that's been several years in the making, looking for a path in terms of having a professional soccer team in Connecticut. Connecticut is the most underserved market for professional sports in the entire United States, right? So it's 3.6 million people, no NFL, no NBA, no NHL, no MLB, and no MLS. Yet it's the top soccer viewing market in the country without an MLS team, right? So it's a tremendous opportunity. And then at the time, I didn't realize that there were no black owners. You know, you don't think about it on your, you couldn't name one, but it wasn't something realize.
Okay.
And so it's really only over the last couple of years as we've been working with MLS and Charles Altchek and the team to figure out how to bring a team to Connecticut that it kind of started to become more something that I realized.
Who are you? Like, tell me about your background. Like, where'd you come from? What'd you do? Where'd you go to school? Your family? Like,
yeah, well,
tell me your story.
You can tell where I went to school by the jersey I'm wearing.
You got
here, the
UConn jersey.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
So, born and raised in the Bronx, son of immigrants from St. Kitts and Nevis, Caribbean family. Had the opportunity to go to prep school in Connecticut. Went to UConn, ran track at UConn, where I met my wife. Spent time at JP Morgan Chase. Before that, I owned nightclubs and restaurants. So I have that kind of hospitality
entrepreneur entertainment guy and stuff.
Quit JP when I was 31. Started a tech startup called SureOptic that managed all the data and audience resolution for streaming media advertising. Sold that for nine figures to TransUnion in 2020, and been figuring out how to be an owner of a team. So we announced that on Tuesday. It was amazing, the energy. We had 200 people at our press conference, which people were like, 200 people don't show up for a press conference, but the amount of energy and excitement that there is in the community and the support, not just from the black community, but the Latino support. There's a big Polish population in Connecticut and others. It's just been such an overwhelming to see how excited people are. We've had thousands of fans already sign up for our fan page and supporters group page. We've had hundreds of kids emailing and parents emailing. We announced that we have the academy. We haven't announced tryout dates and stuff like that. It's just been overwhelming. I think, frankly, the rollout's gone even better than we thought it would.
And when will you start playing? Will you play this year or next year?
2025.
2025.
We have control of land in downtown Bridgeport, Connecticut, so about an hour north of New York City, right on the water, that we just received zoning approval in November to build a stadium. And so that's really what we're working on right now.
Andre Swanston, spelled S-W-A-N-S-T-O-N, is the owner of the newest MLS Next Pro team, Connecticut United Football Club. Why MLS Next Pro? Tell me why you wanted to go that route.
Yeah, so we looked at every possible league and opportunity, but the goal is to go MLS. Well, let's be very clear. We want an MLS team in Connecticut. We're the most densely populated affluent market in America without a pro team. We watch more soccer than many MLS markets. We have more Fortune 500 and Fortune 1000 companies per capita than every all but one MLS market. And so, I think we can help reinvigorate the New York City tri-state area with the rivalry. The biggest show in town for basketball is UConn. UConn plays seven games in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
They're a bigger deal than St. John's is in New York City.
Yeah.
Right? And so, we want to show that Connecticut is a force to reckon with in the tri-state. We have more billionaires per capita than any other market in the country.
Didn't know that.
So, it's just a matter of somebody needs to take the first step, get the land, get the zoning, get the stadium. We're starting the academy, which is going to launch this year in 2024. The next pro team will launch in 2025. And with our expanded ownership group that we're putting together, we will put in a bid for an MLS team.
You heard me tell the story of the black soccer coaches community with their young leadership, Nicole Hercules, which has changed the landscape, and then Lincoln Phillips still involved and headed into the Hall of Fame. Have you done anything with them at all, the black soccer coaches community?
We absolutely will. I've not met Nicole in person. I've met Lincoln in person a couple times. There's a lot of connectivity between our some of the people on my team and them. I personally have not met her yet, but I can promise you we will be working closely with them.
Okay, awesome. You know, as I'm sitting here with you, I'm reminded that I live in Chapel Hill, down the road in High Point. Eddie Pope and Roy Lasseter, they're not owners, but tremendous leadership led by, you know, huge influencers in the black community. Eddie Pope's one of the all-time greats. Roy Lasseter's one of the all-time greats.
The defender of U.S. soccer. I still remember those commercials when I was a kid.
Okay, yeah. So you're aware that they're also
Carolina Core. Yeah. I actually had some time to hang out with them in D.C. during MLS All-Star Weekend.
Okay.
Great guy. They've actually been helpful with some advice and some introductions and stuff over the last 6 months or so as we've been preparing for this. So, yeah, great. I'm excited for them. Their ownership group has been great. Megan and the ownership group there. And so, yeah, Carolina Corps.
All right, listen, Andre Swanson, I'm beyond proud of you, but I want people to make sure that they can follow what you're doing and the Connecticut Sports Group and everything else. Like, do you have websites or social media or whatever you got will take, Andre, and we want to celebrate it with you. Lay it out. You got the platform.
Yeah, no, thanks. So ctunited.com. ctunited.com is our website. Instagram is where we're seeing a lot of, you know, activity, and that is CTUTDFC is on Instagram. Love for people to support, and we're going to be keeping people up to date. We're going to play everybody and anybody. So we're an independent, so obviously we'll play a next pro schedule, but there's USL teams in New England. We're happy to beat them. we're happy to do whatever is needed and partner with MLS Next Pro, MLS teams, USL teams, NISA, whoever, and if it has anything to do with community development, access to soccer clinics and stuff like that. So we want to partner with people when it comes to helping the community, and we want to crush people when it comes to playing on the pitch.
All right. Look, I'm sitting right across from you. You're clearly very successful, but you also have this really cool, chill mannerism, and I'm a little bit emotional and excited. I mean, do you understand, like, how awesome this is, you know what I mean? Or is it, you don't care, you know what I mean? It shouldn't matter, the color of your skin type thing. I mean, where are you on that?
The only thing that I think matters relative to the majority of the fans in Connecticut is having something fun to do, not having to travel 2 hours to New York, 2.5 hours to Boston, family-friendly environment for their kids. I think that's what most people are looking for. I think a lot of the parents are excited about not having to dish out in Connecticut $7,000+ a year if their kids got some talent. So I think that's what the majority of people are excited about. Is there, I think, excitement and pride around having a black owner? Absolutely. There were elected officials at the press conference crying,
nice,
you know, crying at the event, right?
Nice.
So I understand the magnitude of what it means to a lot of people, and you know, there's some pressure too, right? So I can't be unsuccessful because then it's like, oh, the black guy failed, right?
Right?
So, you know, so I'm keenly aware, but I think the main thing for us is to just execute, and everything else will work itself out. But it's exciting, it's humbling. We're working hard. You know, like I said, we announced it Tuesday. I don't see a lot of other owners here, right? I'm here. I've been having meetings the last 48 hours with folks. So excited to talk to you, and you know, we got a lot of work to do.
I hope you don't think less of me. If I was at that, I'd have been crying, man, because that's how moved I've been by the Black Soccer Coaches community. I'm super proud to have you on. Andre Swanston, the owner of the newest MLS Next Pro team, Connecticut United Football Club, CT United FC. Connecticut Sports Group is the name of his company, and they are rocking and rolling. Hey, it's not going to mean much, but I'm super proud of you, man. Good luck to you. We're going to have you back on down the road here, okay?
I'm happy to do that.
All right, my man. Andre Swanston, the owner of the Connecticut United Football Club. Just awesome. When we return, our last guest, arguably the greatest goalkeeper to ever come out of the USA. He played professionally across the pond at the highest levels in England until he was 44. Brad Friedo wraps up the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast with Dean Linke after this message.
This is the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast with Dean Linke. If you'd like to advertise on this show or even be a presenting sponsor, please reach out to Dean at deanclinke@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Podcast Row as part of the 2024 United Soccer Coaches Convention in Anaheim. Dean Linke with one of my all-time favorites and arguably the greatest goalkeeper to ever come out of the USA, Brad Friedo in the house. Brad, so good to see you, man. It's an honor to be with you.
Long time.
Yeah.
Long time. We both know that we always get old on the same day.
Yeah, exactly. And same birthday. We're both from Ohio as well, so always had that as part of it as well. And, you know, Brad, one of the things that I always remembered about you is, if I'm being honest, you know, 94 World Cup, you were rotating games with Tony Meola, and I know you have great respect for Tony and Casey, and boy, we had a lot of good goalkeepers, right?
Yeah, we did.
But you went on to have just the most incredible career afterwards, and you were all business, man. Like, you were business there, and you were business after, and I actually admired that about you, you know? Like, so for Tony Meola, like, as a press officer, he's a dream, right? Because he wanted the media stuff. What you wanted to be is the best goalkeeper in the world.
I wanted to walk behind you and not do the interview, even though I know that made your job hard.
Yeah. Yeah, but you knew what was going to happen, didn't you, or did you not?
No, you don't know. I knew I had talent. Tony was talented. He was an athlete. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know that. And he was a tough one to displace at the time, and I was young. I was younger than Tony. Casey, I was younger than Casey also. I think, you know, we're going back years, so I believe Bora and Casey didn't really see eye to eye. So that kind of, for the 94 World Cup, took Casey out of the picture. And then Jürgen Sommer came in there. But you never know what's going to happen. I was brought up in Cleveland, so my dad, you know, it was hard work and it'll pay off. Hard work and it'll pay off. That's how I lived it. You said it. I was really happy if I could go through a day without doing an interview. But I don't think I was disrespectful to the journalists and things like that.
Yeah.
That wasn't really on my mind. My mind was getting over to Europe. That's what was on my mind day and night.
And remind me, how many years were you in Europe? Because you were there a long, long time.
Long time. So, 92, 93, I signed a contract with Nottingham Forest. Remember, I had all those work permit
yes.
issues. So, you can't really say I was over there. I was, you know, during months at a time as we were trying to get the work permit. I did that at Nottingham Forest. And then in 93, 94, I did that again at Newcastle. Signed again at Sunderland later and was still getting denied. And so it wasn't until December of 96. So let's go there, where I got my work permit at Liverpool. So I did December of 96. Before that, I did a year, 2 years, because I was at Brøndby and Galatasaray. So those 2 years, and then from 96 through till 2015. So you do the math for, and so 19, so 21, 22 years.
Yeah, you played until you were how old when you finally?
44.
44. That is incredible. And I have mad respect for that, because, you know, people are talking about LeBron James and before that Tom Brady. And to me, like, if you can do what
Don't
you.
Don't forget Cal Ripken. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, Cal Ripken. Yeah. And if you can do what you love and you feel good and it makes you happy, why not keep doing it?
Yeah, and the goalkeeping position, we're lucky in that respect. It's much more difficult for an outfield player to stay injury-free, to stay at peak fitness with, I mean, you see the athletes today. By the time I retired, walking out of the tunnel in the Premier League, I was like the ninth or the tenth tallest, you know, and I'm like 6'3", you know,
right,
6'4",
yeah.
whatever it
yeah.
is. You know, so the athletes and it just became immense and fast and powerful. Goalkeepers, I spoke to Edwin van der Sar. We didn't live too far away from each other in Manchester. You know, I was like, how long are you going to play? He goes, I don't know. He goes, you? And I think I was 37 or 38 at the time, and he was, I think we're comparable ages. He's like, I think I'm just going to keep going. You know, and I was like, yeah, me too. You know, but I don't know. Like, I'm looking at it like this is my last game. And he was doing the same, because you just don't have one big injury when you're 38. It's done.
Right.
You know, small ones you can deal with, but one big one, it's over.
Yeah.
So I finished my contract at Villa when I was 40. I kind of thought, okay, this will be my retirement. And then Liverpool came back in for me. West Brom came in for me. Aston Villa offered another year contract. And then Tottenham offered me a 2-year deal. And I was like, wow, I never lived in London. So, yeah. So I did it again. And then I ended up doing three contracts at Tottenham. So I played till I was 44.
Incredible. Did you have any MLS stops in there at all?
Yeah, the first year of the league.
That's what I thought.
So I was at Galatasaray, and you know, I'll always be really grateful to Sunil Gulati for this. This was back. Remember, we had terrible time getting players released when we were playing in Europe because CONCACAF didn't use the international fixture
dates. I do remember that. Yeah.
Remember? So in Turkey, the media was a crazy frenzy. I mean, it was tough, and I think I would have missed something like 12 games that season if I did all the qualifiers for the 98 World Cup. I think it would have been.
Okay.
And it was like too much. So, and Liverpool was interested in me. And I needed to get my caps up because back then the work permit law rules were different. So somehow, some way, Sunil structured a deal that I would go back on loan to Columbus Crew.
For that first year.
Yeah. That
96, Ohio Stadium.
That first year.
Yeah.
And actually, ironically, and I'd have to go back. This might sound like an exaggeration. I don't want it to be, but because I think it's true. Because Amber Steele was the administrator. You remember Amber?
Yeah, of course.
One of my all-time
favorites. She came to my wedding, yeah.
One of my all-time favorites, Amber, in U.S. soccer. I was in the air flying back from Istanbul, and I think Timo Lukowski got fired while I was in the air.
Oh, man.
And that's who I was coming back to play for, because Timo
right.
and I
he was
we
with
were
us the whole time.
We,
yeah,
were Cleveland,
yeah.
we were Cleveland guys.
He's like a Solon guy even, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was like, so with Timo, and you know what, I understood his humor. Like, he was dry.
Right, yeah, yeah.
He
totally
was
dry.
I was like, Timo, and I can say this now. Timo won't mind, but like, so during the night, remember we were in residency in Mission Viejo, right? So Timo used to come up to me every now and again, because it didn't happen often, and sort of whisper, Brad, we're not having an afternoon session. I'll meet you at Tierra's Creek or whatever golf club.
Of course, yeah. That's
and
awesome.
I'd be like, we don't have a second session? He goes, no, don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And then he'd come by and he goes, hey, we have room for one more. And then I would speak to like Chungi or Sorbs or something and say, hey, do you want to come join us?
There you go.
And then we'd go and have a round of golf with Timo. And he's like, if any of you ever tell Bora, this is over.
Right, yeah. And you guys always kept the secret, right?
Yeah, until right now on your podcast.
Incredible. You know, not to make it about me, but one of the cool things is that game when I was the voice of the Colorado Rapids, you were in goal, and I was telling Marcelo Balboa, we played New York first, and we had to go to Columbus. And for me, it was a dream. I grew up going to Buckeye games, right?
Yeah.
So before practice at Ohio Stadium, Bob Houghton and Marcelo Balboa caught us all over, and they put us in the thing. And you know me, I was a little bit shy, but, you know, not that shy. But they were like, hey, Dean, let's give a speech. So I gave a speech, and we're going to kick Columbus Crew's butt. We're going to go get Brad Friedel. We're going to go all of this. And I ran to the O because I grew up watching the Buckeyes run to the O, and when I get to the O, guess where all the guys are? They're still back there in the tunnel. None of them. So Marcelo and Roy Wegerle and all those guys are dying laughing. You know what I mean? That doesn't surprise you at all, does it?
No. Not at all. I remember you whenever you were every press officer. Like with the national teams, we were lucky because we would get, once you qualify for the event, we were sort of together for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, even if it was 4 weeks or 6 weeks, it seems like a long time when you're at those tournaments.
Sure.
And you'd always see each press officer had their different way. It's like Frosty had his different way, and you had your different way of when they wanted something, and it wasn't like a mandatory thing, right?
right.
And you'd just be like sitting there. You'd be waiting. You could see your face. You're like kind of devastated to ask, but it's your job, and you'd be like, hey,
Brad, one time, man.
You think you could do me a solid?
Yeah. Well, so tell me what you're doing now, because you were coaching for a little bit. You were broadcasting for a little bit. What's Brad Friedel doing today?
So, after I parted ways with New England, I owned and operated an agency for a little while. I consult for an agency now. I'm not in that same agency. I consult for groups purchasing clubs overseas mainly. Some deals here. I'm here at the coaches convention on behalf of goalkeeper.com. It's the only data analytics company for only goalkeepers. So you know,
cool.
You have Second Spectrum and Y Scout, and there's another one. I'm on the spot. But there's the three big players, Opta, sorry, okay. And they deal with the outfield players. Nobody does goalkeeping.
There you go.
So right now, if you look at the details of goalkeepers, it would be clean sheets, save percentage, but nobody distinguishes between, let's just say, like a 15-mile-an-hour shot from 40 yards out or Harry Kane hitting one at 70 miles an hour from 6 yards out.
Right.
To them, a shot's just a shot.
Right.
If you spill it, if you don't spill the ball, it's just it still counts as a save. What we do is, so John Harrison, who's an astrophysicist from Cambridge, writes all the algorithms, and every single goalkeeping action is graded, just like an outfield player's accelerations and decelerations and high-intensity sprints and all the above. So it's quite remarkable, and we've had a lot of success with Premier League clubs, with federations around the globe, MLS teams, and taking the goalkeeping data because it can help them with scouting, it can help them with their recruitment in their academy, it can help them develop their academy goalkeepers to a benchmark of somebody. So if somebody thought, you know, Tony Meola or myself or whoever, Casey, was the benchmark for a goalkeeper, you could get all of our data, and that's the benchmark to train your keepers to.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really it's some sensational stuff that is way over my head on the algorithms.
Yeah.
But when I see it, like, I would love to have had it when I was coaching.
Yeah.
It's remarkable stuff.
And you love putting your name on it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it will also help teams in the transfer window. So we deal with a lot of Premier League clubs. In the Premier League clubs, the money's huge, and if you get it wrong, it's a big hit on your balance sheet.
Okay.
So we help the goalkeepers. They set up their KPIs for what they want, and then we can scour the world for that goalkeeper that would fit into the Premier League for them, and it can save them a lot of money, because what happens is, if they don't have the data, it's only an eye test, and the easier eye tests are the local ones. The local ones that are already in the Premier League cost the most money.
Yep.
So they know what they're getting, but they gotta spend a lot for it. But if you can do your homework, like Chelsea's got Georgi Petrovic, you know, for next to nothing comparatively on transfer fees,
yeah,
that are going in the Premier League, and he's a good goalkeeper. He might, you know, if he does what I think he can do, you know, if they could, he could either be at Chelsea for years and years and years, or maybe they can sell him for 80 million.
Yeah.
You know, make money on their keeper.
Incredible. And your name's on it. It's just goalkeeper.com.
Goalkeeper.com, Goalkeeper XG. There's about seven components underneath the company.
Okay.
But the data analytics is a big one. I help them with partnerships. I help them with getting in front of people. And then I let the astrophysicists take over with the product.
And then, are you on social media? Can people follow your movements? Or?
I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah. Somebody came up to me today, say, "Hey, I just posted on your Twitter account." I said, "I hate to burst your bubble, but I don't have
that's
a Twitter account."
That's not you.
Account.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
So yeah. So anyone, if there is anyone listening, I do not have any social media accounts. But goalkeeper.com does.
Okay.
And Goalkeeper XG does.
Before we say goodbye, first of all, it's so great to see you again, Brad, and the ties with the birthday in Ohio always meant a lot to me. But do you have kids, family?
I have five kids.
Five kids. Yeah, give me all their names.
I've got Isabella, Allegra, Rafe, Amelia, and Harbor.
I love it. I love it. And they're in the States, or are they?
They're one in college, everyone else in the States.
Okay, living
Colorado and Miami.
Colorado and Miami. All right, Brad Friedel, man, I was so glad that you came back. I guess you didn't even realize I wanted to put you on, and we'll air
this in a couple of weeks. But now, like, I'm not a player. I don't have, like, I've taken that ego off now, so I'll come up. I'll do anything for you, Dean.
All right, Brad Friedel, thank you much, man. Great to have you.
Nice one. You too.
I want to thank Brad, Alexi, and Andre for being outstanding guests as part of the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast. Hope you appreciate the new name. I certainly am grateful. Also want to thank the great people at United Soccer Coaches, especially you, our members. I want to thank Dylan for making sure this show gets up. And I want to thank my producer, Colin Thrash, for each and every one of them and all of you. I'm Dean Linke. We'll see you next week for another edition of the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the United Soccer Coaches Dean of Soccer Podcast with Dean Linke. To learn more, please email dean@deanclinke@gmail.com.